for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Robbie Stanley.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5.
Hey, welcome into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this Monday evening brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you on this Monday night here in Nashville, Tennessee, alongside Sean Smith from On the Forecheck. Sean, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Robbie. Really happy to be here.
Well, really appreciate you taking time to join us tonight, Sean. So we got a lot to get into. Let's just start with the Predators' big win against the Red Wings the other night. They get it done 4-1. Matt Duchene scores. Philip Forsberg scores. Some beautiful plays by those two guys. Forsberg at 20 goals this season. Matt Duchene already at 19 goals as well. What have been your impressions specifically of the way that those two have played to begin the season and your confidence as they continue forward here?
You know, it's really funny, and you ask about those two, because back at the beginning of the season, one of the things that I think we were all saying was you really needed your top line players. You needed your Philip Forsbergs and your Matt Duchenes and even your Ryan Johansons to step up and kind of play into the role that you've been expecting them to play for a while. So seeing them come into the season and get going, which is something that in the past we haven't exactly seen, was pretty nice. And realistically, you know, you look at some of the comments that Matt Duchene has made. He's very humble about the strides he's made this season, where he's really attacking. He knows exactly what he needs to do in order to get up and get pucks into those high danger areas. That was a big just growth area after last season, I think you saw with a lot of the guys. But he's done a lot of work, obviously, whether he'll, you know, say it or not, to improve on that. And I think especially for both of those two guys, you really have, they're putting together incredible seasons, and you really just want to keep it going for the rest of the season and see where it goes.
I agree. And it's one of those things too, where, you know, I think most Predators fans heading into this season just probably assumed that Matt Duchene was a lost cause at this point. Ryan Johansson was a lost cause at this point. And obviously both those guys have played pretty well to begin the season. I'm just curious from your vantage point, Sean, what do you think is different about Matt Duchene? Do you think it's the system and he's finally bought in? Is it John Hines has given him a little bit more responsibility, a combination of the two? What do you think has been so different that's allowed to be, you know, Matt Duchene has been not only productive, I mean, he's almost at a point per game pace at this point.
So one of the biggest things is, it's funny because I think last year, and look, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm one of the big stats guys out there, because that's not my area of expertise at all. But Duchene was doing everything he needed to do on paper to get the job done last season. And so I think you're seeing him get rewarded for that. And it's little differences. It's not some major change that he's made, but there's definitely been what I would call, you know, a systemic change to the way the team gets to the front of the net, the way they get their angles right, they get their passes right when they're in those high danger areas. And I think, you know, yes, I think systematically, I don't know that I'd say Duchene's bought into it anymore as much as I think the team has embraced what the system is. And that's really where I think you're seeing the difference, is that it's not just a guy here or there that's kind of come online and is doing what needs to be done. It's everybody working together. And that's why you're starting to see a big change in production.
Well, I think so too. And I think one of the biggest things is it's a confident group right now, but I think you nailed it. They know the way that they need to play. They know the way that John Hines is asking them to play. And when you get comfortable inside that system, which I feel like they are at this point, then the creativity starts to come out a little bit as well. I mean, the goal that Duchene scored the other night, the first goal against Detroit, where it's basically a give and go with him and Forsberg. I mean, that's just two guys that skill takes over and they're reading and reacting out there. There's not much thinking going on. That to me, Sean, just kind of screamed of two really confident players being on the same page, buying into the system, and letting their natural skill and creativity just kind of take over from there.
Oh, I agree 100%. I think if you look at someone like Forsberg, and you see in the past where he's had those flashes where you've seen the between the legs passes or the pass through another defender or the pass to himself, you know, you had those flashes, and they're all, I guess, in the in the realm of like a good season, but I think what you're looking at now is a great season. It's like you said, everyone knows their role. They're able to improvise when they need to because everyone's hitting the right notes all the time. So when you have that opportunity, or you're up against, you know, three guys, you can start doing some fancy stick work and, you know, really embarrass some other people out there to make things happen. But, you know, Duchesne's the same way. And I don't know that I think next to Forsberg, he gets enough credit for that. But there are several times, especially in that Detroit game, where you'd see him take the puck in deep with three or four people on him. And he just looked like he was playing a different game than they were.
Well, the thing that stands out to me, and I wondered if they moved him over to wing full time this year, how he would embrace that role. Because if you remember, Sean, like when Duchesne got here, I mean, he was pretty adamant that he wanted to play center, that they brought him here to play center. And obviously, I mean, with the way his first two seasons go, I mean, you weren't really in a position to make demands at that point. And it was just basically trying to figure out whatever worked if you were Matt Duchesne and this coaching staff. But I think he's really bought into that role. And I look at him, he's second on the team in shots on goal. And I know that doesn't say everything, but what it tells me is he has embraced the role on the wing. He is willing and able to shoot, and there's not much hesitation when he gets the puck. He's looking to score out there on a nightly basis.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned when he came into the team, he was pretty adamant that he was going to be playing center role. I think he was also coming into the team under Peter Laviolette. So you've got a different approach there from a coaching standpoint, of course, too. So I think, you know, as you mentioned earlier, is it embracing the John Hines system a little bit more? And I'd say probably yes. You know, the system that Hines has created definitely allows, I think, a lot more room for creativity by the forwards than your defenders, who, you know, were just under Laviolette, just pounding it in from the blue line as much as they could. So you get that little bit more space up there for those forwards who can make things happen. And, you know, like you said, he's not afraid to shoot, and he's willing to do it. And I think the difference between this season and last season, like I said before, is that it's going in the net. It is not that simple, but I mean, that's a big part of it, is that you've got everyone else playing that supporting role to make it happen.
Well, and then there's Forsberg, who it seems like, Sean, every time he's in the lineup is scoring a goal for this team for the most part. I mean, he's played in 30 games this year, a combination of an injury, and was on the COVID list as well. He's got 20 goals in 30 games, 32 points on the season for Forsberg. He's shooting at, I think, 23.5% right now. So that's going well for Philip Forsberg so far. Is this the best hockey that you've ever seen him play in his career? Because I think you can make an argument that it is.
I would have to agree with that. That's a solid statement. I think he's playing the best hockey he's played in his career. And I think the other thing is, and I don't know how much of a role this plays into it, but he knows that his next contract is coming up too. So, I mean, there's definitely got to be a little bit extra motivation.
Oh, yeah.
To say, you know, look, I'm at the top of my game. I mean, I'm coming into my prime here, and I'm going to get paid for what I'm doing. And I don't blame him one bit.
No, I don't blame him one bit for that either. And I tell you what, if he keeps up on this pace, he's going to make himself some money this offseason. I don't think there's any question about that with the way that he's been playing. I mean, these two guys, you know, the power play chemistry has been impressive to watch. Obviously, that line of Granlund, Duchesne, and Forsberg has been the best line all season long for the Predators. I don't think there's any question about that. It just kind of feels like that those three guys have settled in. That's going to be the line as they move forward here. And earlier in the season, I was kind of worried about, all right, well, that's fine, but who's going to play with Ryan Johansson? But somehow Ryan Johansson just continues to be productive, really regardless of who he's playing with this year. And that's what you want out of your number one center. That's what you want out of a guy that you're paying $8 million a year. We've seen it at times throughout Johansson's career, but honestly, Sean, it really hasn't mattered much who they put with Johansson so far this year. He's found a way to be productive both on the power play and 5-on-5 as well.
Yeah, you look, and what's funny is, you know, we're talking a lot about Forsberg, we're talking a lot about Duchesne, but and the number's probably not as impressive, but Johansson's sitting at 12 goals. And that, to me, you know, we've seen seasons where you're in, you know, what, 10 goals, 8 goals, and that's not what you want. So when you're already about halfway through the season and you're popping up, I got, you know, 12 goals under his belt, 21 assists, that's exactly what you, I mean, sure, everyone would like it to be just some astronomical number, but fortunately, I think the team's got enough support going down the roster that you don't have to have, you know, one superstar with you know, 100 goals right now or 100 points right now to really make the team, you know, successful. So with Johansson producing at a higher level or a higher rate than normal, you know, that's just, again, we go back to those names at the beginning of the season you want to see producing. That's another one that's right up there with the other guys. You want to see Johansson playing like he gets paid $8 million a year. And I think he's producing with whatever he's got on his line, whoever's there with him, he's making them look good too. So successful year for Johansson, I would say.
We're off and running here on Preds Insiders here on this Monday evening on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Sean Smith from ontheforecheck.com talking Predators. And when we come back, we'll get into the Predators, their sustainability that we've seen so far this year. What do we think that is? How big of a threat do we think this team is in the Western Conference? We'll get to that coming up on the other side. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Robbie Stanley alongside of Sean Smith from On the Forecheck, talking Preds. And what a season it's been thus far, Sean. It's, you know, pretty incredible to watch what this team did. Full disclosure, I've said it many times here on the show. I had the Predators finishing in seventh place in the Central Division to begin the season. I am willing to raise my hand and admit that that was probably very stupid and that they are not going to finish in seventh place in the Central Division. Right now here they sit in third, and not only are they in third in the Central, they are in third in the entire Western Conference at the moment. So I think it's fair to say that by most accounts, this team has exceeded expectations thus far. Sean, just your overall impressions of this team, and now here we are more than halfway through this season. To me, it kind of seems like this team's for real. What say you?
Do I need to go back and tell you what my preseason predictions were too? Is that
if you want to, you do whatever you want to do.
So I had them, you know, kind of in this fourth through sixth zone, and you mentioned seventh place. So I didn't want you to feel so bad about that because, you know, the way I looked at it, fourth through sixth was going to be a pretty tight little race there. And what's funny, you know, looking at the standings, they are in third place. It's the games in hand monster that scares me, if you know what I mean. And, yeah. And that's the thing is in the Central Division, the Predators have played 43 games. You still have a team like Colorado, who's in first place right now, has only played 39 games, and they're still 4 points ahead of the Predators. So there was a bit of time earlier in the season where the Predators were sitting in first, but they had played all these extra games compared to everybody else. And I think I don't want to say that what I'll call the games in hand monsters catching up to them. But I think it's showing that maybe first place is not exactly where you would say this team's going to be, but third place seems comfortable, honestly. And if I'm looking at things the right way, you know, they're just kind of right there with Minnesota in a sense that they got about the same winning percentage. I feel like they could end up in third, they could end up in fourth, or they could even go on a run and end up as high as second. I don't think anybody's going to touch Colorado.
I don't think so either. I'd be surprised if they got to Colorado at this point with the machine that that offense has become. But nonetheless, like, I feel pretty secure in saying this is a playoff team based on what we've seen thus far. And that would be yet another example of, you know, David Poile, John Hines and company getting it done and getting to the playoffs. And, you know, I look at this roster, Sean, especially when everyone's healthy, and I know that that's a big if in the NHL, and that once playoff time comes around, you're going to have injuries. So I understand all that heading into it. But I look at, obviously, the goaltender in UC Saros. You feel great about. I don't think there's any question about that. If you're telling me that this is the version of Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson and Philip Forsberg and Mikael Granlund you're going to see all year, I'm feeling pretty good about that. And when everyone's healthy, and I know this defensive core doesn't have the star power that they've had in years past with, you know, guys like Subban and Ellis and, you know, everything that they bring in the table. You still have Josi, still have Ekholm, obviously. But when everybody is healthy with the style that they play, I think I like this group of six that they've got on defense as much as I've liked them in a long time. And that is obviously Josi, Ekholm, Fabro, Benning, Borowiecki, and Alex Carrier as well. Like, those six to me have really, I think, solidified themselves as really reliable on a night in, night out basis. And look, yeah, you know this, Sean, how long have we spent time here talking about third defense pairs with the Predators. I feel like Borowiecki and Benning have been about as solid as you can ask for in that role.
I'd have to agree with you. And, you know, I consider myself a champion of the third pairing defender, honestly.
That's right.
The unique appreciation for what they need to do in a game and what they can bring to a game. But you take these two guys in particular, and you give me someone like Matt Benning, who he's a sneaky menace, I guess I would say. You know, he looks kind of unassuming. He doesn't look like a big, tough guy, but man, can he hit hard against the boards. And when he's ready to fight, he is ready to throw down. So it's, you don't just have this strong physical player, but when he's been called upon to play higher, you know, defensively, he's played on the second pairing, I think, very well. And so it's not just that you have guys that are good on the third pairing, for the first time in a long time, where you really feel like you can depend on them and they're reliable, but when called upon to play higher, they can do it. You know, you take away some of the subtractions that we've had to deal with over the off season. And you look at the additions and Alex Carrier, and I've been really impressed with Carrier. I felt like Carrier, I kept waiting for him to come up for several seasons. And then when he finally has, I've not been disappointed. I like the defenders that they have on the ice. I like the guys that are out there, that top six that you're talking about. And I feel good heading into the second half of the season with them back there. I'd really like to see more of just that healthy defensive core to where you can see Borowiecki and Benning playing on the third pair consistently, as opposed to having to move up and down though.
Yeah. And, you know, Sean, I don't think anybody would confuse this team with Colorado or Vegas in terms of, you know, the offensive firepower that they bring to the table. Like, especially, you know, if Vegas gets Eichel at some point, I mean, it's just going to add a completely different element. And Colorado is kind of its own animal right now. So it would have to be kind of a different style and a different way of playing the game. But I guess my question for you is, as you watch this team play to an identity that I think is pretty firmly established now at this point that John Hines has built, how much of a threat do you think they are in the Western Conference in terms of maybe being able to get in the playoffs, do some damage, and make some noise? I don't know that I'm talking, you know, Stanley Cup final or anything like that, although I've seen crazier things happen, i.e. the Montreal Canadiens getting there last year. But it's just as you evaluate the whole of this team and the sum of the parts of what we've seen so far, how big of a threat do you think this team could be as they move forward?
You know, I think the threat level has a lot to do with that identity and how well they play to it. And what I mean by that is this team seems to thrive when people doubt them.
Yeah.
And I'd say that's true historically speaking, and not just the season. And with, you know, you making your own prediction, me making my prediction, everybody over it on the forecheck, our predictions were not, you know, where they are now. We'll just say that.
Sure.
The team was being doubted. They stepped in and they played to this identity very well, and they made a lot of noise very quickly. But then something happened, and I don't remember who it was that said it. I think it may have been Hines. He said, "We're not going to surprise anyone anymore." And that should tell you that they've played well the identity. Where they've struggled is when they don't play to that identity for a complete game. And so I think it's going to be hard to stop this team as hard as they hit and as hard as they play. I mean, they're making guys on the other team earn every inch of ice they get when they're coming down. And it's just, if they can do that consistently for 60 minutes every night, I think they could make a solid playoff run. Like you said, I don't know if I'm talking Stanley Cup final, but I definitely think they could get pretty deep. And I think they could drag some of these series out for more than, you know, four or five games too.
Well, to me, like, to that point, like, the Predators are, the way they're currently constructed, I think the type of team that some of your run-and-gun teams or maybe some of your upper echelon teams don't want to see in the playoffs, because the way the Predators play is basically playoff hockey. Like, that's basically the way that you have to play in terms of the north-south game that you got to play. You got to be hard to play against physically, mentally, all these things that I think John Hines deserves a lot of credit for the way they've been able to build their identity. And now the physicality that they bring to the table too. Like, I still think you can go back to Duchesne's first year here when you had Kyle Turris and you had all these different pieces. Nick Bonino was here. Like, I think that team was more talented than this team is. but it was nowhere near as good and nowhere near as built in terms of being able to handle some of those moments. Like, I don't think anybody would mistake this Predators team as the most talented team that they've ever put out there, but I feel like this team is more equipped to be dangerous than they've been in a long time, probably since really their President's Trophy year.
Well, like you said, they are hard to play against. That's a team that your run-and-gun teams don't want to run into because of the style of play. And when you talk about those teams that want to move quickly down the ice, you're going to punish the other team. You're going to punish those speedy players by catching them in the corners and forcing them to go for loose pucks when they don't want to do that, which is going to force a lot of turnovers. You can get them to, I would say, lock down the neutral zone as much as they're willing to pin guys to the wall. That's not a team you want to see anywhere in the playoffs.
We'll continue to discuss the Predators here on Preds Insiders. With the calendar about to flip to February, that means the trade deadline in the NHL will be here before you know it. That coming up on March the 21st. How should the Nashville Predators approach the NHL trading deadline, and how much does the Philip Forsberg situation play into that? We'll get Sean's thoughts on that coming up next. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Sean Smith here with you on this Monday evening in Nashville, Tennessee. Also, the great Max Herz flying the controls back there as well. I can't believe we've made it 30 minutes into the show, and I have not just totally congratulated Max Herz on the just incredible job that he did with play-by-play while Pete Weber was out and over the COVID list. Max, I love you. You did an awesome job, and please remember me when you're doing play-by-play in the NHL full-time one day.
Thanks, boys. I'll never forget you, Robbie.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Talking Preds, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. So Sean, the calendar is about to flip, even though it feels like January of this month, at least for me, has taken approximately 75 days. At this point, we are almost in February. And although the NHL trade deadline typically has been in February over the course of the past few years, with the Olympics originally scheduled to take place, it got pushed back this year until March 21st. So a little bit of a later deadline in the NHL. Now that we're not going to the Olympics and players are going to be playing in more games that have been made up from COVID, what if you're David Poile in the front office of the Predators, knowing the position that you're in right now and the way you've played really all year long up until this point, what is your approach to the trade deadline if you're David Poile and the Predators? And how much does, I guess, the Philip Forsberg situation factor into it? Obviously still not signed to a contract extension. He's got an expiring contract after this season. I would assume, Sean, at this point, if they're still in this position this time a month from now, there's not any way that David Poile is going to be trading Philip Forsberg away, whether or not he's signed to a contract. I could be wrong about that, but that would shock me at that point.
It would definitely be a bold move. I'd be shocked as well. I don't think that's someone that you're willing to just let go. I think I'd want to say, and I don't know, but I want to say that both sides want Forsberg to be here next season. So it would make sense that even if you didn't have a contract signed, if they're waiting until I don't know about all that stuff. I just know that they've got to be thinking that next season has Forsberg on this roster. He's not somebody they'd be willing to trade away. Are you wondering about just what would my overall strategy be at the trade deadline, or just I would do with Forsberg?
Well, just both, because I think, you know, the Predators are in a position because of kind of some of the moves they've made with, you know, Arvidsson being gone and Ellis being gone now, and some of the money that they've cleared up. They're really in a position right now that not a lot of teams in the NHL are in terms of they actually have some salary cap flexibility, and with it being a flat cap in the NHL, that's pretty hard to come by in today's NHL. So David Poile's got some room to operate. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to be at this deadline. It could be in the offseason and free agency. There's several different ways that you can handle it. But honestly, Sean, like to me, like the idea coming into this season of the Preds being a buyer, I never really entertained because I didn't think they'd be this good. And now here they are this good. I guess my question for you is, knowing what you know about this team, the way that they play and the depth that they've built, how aggressive would you be if you're David Poile? Would you be willing to give up a first round pick? Would you be willing to give up multiple prospects? Like, with the team that we've seen on the ice, what do you think his aggression level should be, if at all, at the deadline?
It depends on who's out there. And I, yep. I think it's funny that, you know, we always talk about, you know, who's available, who's this, who's that. And then we find out that, you know, general managers talk all the time. They have a pretty good idea of the prices on everybody, who's available, what they want for them, and what they might specifically want from your team for that player. So, you know, it depends on me on who's available, number one. Number two, it also depends on the health of the roster. You know, while the team has had some injuries, while the team has experienced some COVID-related illness and absences, they've been very fortunate. There hasn't been a major injury. So if you look down toward the trade deadline and you start seeing those types of things pop up, that might become a necessity to where you need to go out and get somebody to come in and fill a role. So, I mean, there's a lot of variables. If sure. everything stays the way it is, if everybody stays on this pretty healthy, even keel, I'm not a buyer at the deadline. I don't know, especially with the deadline being pushed far, far past where it normally is. You know, what does that say toward bringing in a player with just a little bit of season left as far as chemistry building and being able to get on the same page with the rest of the team? That's where I would be a little hesitant to say, you know, we need to start pulling people in here. Because then the question is, like you said, do you give up a first round pick? Now, you know, who knows? There's a lot of things out there that could happen. Colorado, who seems to be on a tear and have to be the odds on cup favorite, they could suffer injuries too. They could run yep. into major problems. It could derail their season and leave the Predators in a much better position going into the postseason. So the things stay the way they are. I'm not a buyer. I'm not looking to give up a lot of assets. I know that I don't want to get into a situation where somebody looks appealing toward the end of the season. I end up trading and signing them to a contract that I'm going to regret later. I almost want to see what this team can do in this year of the competitive rebuild, which is pretty darn competitive, if you ask me. So yeah. I want to see what they can do and then kind of let the chips fall where they may and then make my decisions in the off season.
Yeah, it's really interesting in terms of the options that I think David Poile is going to have because, you know, barring a collapse that I just don't really foresee coming with this team just based on the way that they play and the goaltending that they have, I think it's pretty safe to say they're not going to be sellers at the deadline. So I agree with you. Like, I think there's a lot of credence to be had for, all right, let's work to this point. Let's stick with it. I think the other thing that does that's really interesting is these young guys that you're trying to bring along with you almost on the fly in some cases that allows them to get some, you know, healthy playoff experience. You know, guys like Tomasino, who I think started to play a little bit more consistently as of late. Tolvanen's played better. You know, obviously Tanner Jeannot. I mean, there's talk about him in the Calder conversation at this point. All these guys, for the most part, with the exception of Tomasino, they've been in some big moments before. They've been in playoff moments before. But, you know, going through the grind of an 82-game season and then the playoff, that's different. And those guys haven't had to do that. I mean, last year, you know, as well as they played, I mean, Tanner Jeannot came up with what? Like 15 games left, 20 games left, and then went to the playoffs. Yeah. Like, you know, it's not like they've had to go through this before. So I think there's some credence to allowing them to get that experience and helping them develop on the fly while also still being competitive. Like, that to me is what's different from this Predators team than Predators teams of the past. Like, you know, you think back to the year they brought in, what was it, Brian Boyle and Wayne Simmonds, and Granlund was a part of that too. Like, you could identify some needs that team has. Was, all right, well, they don't have anybody that can get in front of the net, so go get some size and Boyle and Simmonds. Well, they've got that with this group. When Duchesne and Forsberg and Johansson are playing this way, like, you feel pretty good about your top six at this point. So I feel like there's not a glaring need that they really have. You could always use more scoring. I don't think anybody would argue with that. But, again, the way that this team plays the game, I wouldn't be surprised if David Poile went out and maybe added an extra veteran defenseman that could play in your bottom six if need be, or a minor move like that. But I think the Predators really like where they are. I think they really like the roster that they put in place. And I don't expect Poile and the Predators to make a big move and really mortgage their future with a first-round pick or do anything like that.
No, I don't think so either. You're in – it's not a, you know, tear-down, rebuild mode, but you are looking with an eye to the future. And so I think you're not willing to give up those assets, especially draft picks and things like that, in order to get, you know, back somebody who might work out for the postseason. So, you know, and then again, I don't know. It just, to me, it's not worth it. I want to see what Poile can do in an off season coming off of this competitive rebuild year with success and with what is going to be a lot of cap space to work with.
I agree. And the Forsberg part of this, I mean, you know, before the season, it's really interesting to me the way that this is breaking out, because I think before the season, you could kind of sense that Forsberg was frustrated with some of the moves that had been made. I mean, obviously his Instagram post when Arvidsson got traded, everybody saw that. You know, Ryan Ellis, a lot of Predators fans have very polarizing opinions on Ryan Ellis, but Ryan Ellis, I could tell you, was loved in that locker room and was a very popular figure in that locker room. So I think it was, as much as there was a, from I think the Predators management side of things, of, all right, it's a contract year, let's see what Forsberg brings to the table and see how he responds. Can he stay healthy? All these different things. I think it was probably equal parts from Forsberg's side saying, all right, well, let's see what this team is now. Let's see if I sign a contract extension here, what I'm signing up for. And Sean, I would have to think that this team, if you gave like Philip Forsberg some honesty pills or some truth serum or whatever you want to call it, I would have to think that the way it's played out through 43 games have probably surpassed his expectations. I don't know that. I don't want to speak for Philip Forsberg, but that would have to be my guess, that they're in a much better spot than maybe he even thought they would be.
I think you're probably right on that. Again, I don't want to put words in his mouth like you said, but you know, if you look at what a lot of people were predicting, I mean, we've all been surprised, I think would be the realistic answer. So it seems to me that I'd say the players, well, of course, they'll never say, oh, well, we didn't think we'd be too good this year. They're probably looking at it going, hey, we put something together that works really well. I really like this. And this style of play, you know, believe it or not, Forsberg loves this style of play. He yeah. really enjoys kind of leaning into this heel role a little bit. And when you see him smiling as people throw their fists at him, or, you know, it's funny because you wouldn't think that the guy who's, you know, your leading scorer or your elite playmaker here would enjoy that kind of back and forth. But he seems like he was built for it. And I think that's probably like the icing on top of the cake for him this season, is that's kind of become the identity of this team. And he gets to get his stirring stick out and stir it up sometimes on the ice.
It's one of my favorite parts about this team in this season is watching him get in there and just a little smile on his face. You know, that's just got to really bother people on the other side of it. It's very funny to me.
It would bother me, I know that for sure, but I'd like to think that if I were in his shoes, I'd be doing the same thing.
We'll continue the conversation on the Nashville Predators. Robbie Stanley alongside of Sean Smith from On the Forecheck here on Preds Insiders. We'll take a look at maybe some Predators that could be up for some individual postseason awards coming up on the other side. Who do we think has the best chance to win one? We'll get to that on the other side. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Preds Insiders, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Sean Smith from On the Forecheck here with you on Preds Insiders, talking all things Nashville Predators. Of course, as always, welcoming your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. So, Sean, I feel like there are four guys for the Nashville Predators that are perhaps in legitimate consideration for some hardware individually at the end of the season. I know we're only at the halfway point, so there's still a long way to go in the season. Lots of things can happen. But I feel like, at least to some degree, all four of these guys have a somewhat realistic chance to compete for the awards, and those guys would be this. I think UC Saros certainly should be in the Vezina Trophy conversation. I think Roman Josi absolutely should be in the Norris Trophy conversation. I think you can make a pretty good argument that John Hines needs to be in coach of the year conversation for the Jack Adams. And obviously Tanner Janot, as we talked about earlier, he is in the Calder Trophy conversation. Now, that one to me is interesting because it really depends on who you ask. I mean, Trevor Zegras is getting a lot of love. Hey, there are guys that have Janot anywhere from first on the list to like ninth among rookies. So that one is always kind of a crapshoot to figure out in the NHL as to who's going to do what. So that one might be the toughest award to try to figure out. But of those four guys that I just mentioned, so that's Janot, Yossi, Saros, and John Hines for Coach of the Year, which of those four do you think has the best chance to win an award at the end of the season?
You know, I'm going to say it's Saros. And I think the reason I'm going to go with Saros is I think that, you know, we've talked about a lot of things that have gone on with this team this season. We've talked about a lot of players that have contributed to their overall success. But if you subtracted one player from this roster that would have the greatest impact, it would be Yossi Saros. Yep. That's why I would say he's got to be at least have the best chance on this team of winning one of those awards. I'm not saying or taking away anything from anyone else, but that's one subtraction that I don't think you can fix with you know, pulling in another goalie or something like that. That's, if that goes away, a lot of the success goes away, because you've seen times when the team has underperformed, but Saros has overperformed and kept them in the lead or kept them in games and given them the opportunity to retake the lead and things like that. That to me is really where I think Saros has shined over the other players and coach you mentioned.
Well, I think it's a great point. And it also kind of feels like sometimes, really not even just in the NHL, but maybe in sports in general, the recognition that you deserve maybe comes a year after you should have gotten it. Like, you know, in the second half of last year, you know, Predators fans around here were irate that he didn't end up as a Vezina Trophy finalist. Now, the thing to keep in mind is the Vezina Trophy is voted on by the NHL general managers. So that's always kind of an interesting element to it as well. But I feel like when you factor that in, people started to take notice of Saros. But the way that he's played really from start to finish this year so far, I think the entire league has kind of caught on and they know what kind of a goaltender he is. Now, look, there's still lots of really good goalies out there. And, you know, Andrei Vasilevskiy still is playing at an incredible level. I mean, there's a lot of guys that you can put in the Vezina conversation. But if you start to really dig into the numbers, really since basically the halfway point of last year, in a whole lot of categories, Yossi Saros is, I mean, he's flat out been the best goalie in the league. I mean, the numbers are what they are on that point. So I would agree. I think Saros has got a great chance. The Yossi part of this is interesting to me too, because that's probably where I would go next in terms of the chances to win the award. Because, you know, obviously Yossi won the Norris Trophy a couple of years ago. He was incredible that season. I think he might be better this year. I mean, you're talking about 42 points, 41 games. You know, the points part of this kind of drives me nuts in this conversation, obviously, honestly, Sean, because I feel like too often, you know, the Norris Trophy is basically turned into, all right, which defenseman has the most points? Not always, but that's happened. But you start to look at the other areas of his game defensively. You know, if you really want to get fancy with the stats and, you know, the slot passes and leading the rush up the ice, like all these things that we know Roman Yossi does so well, I've always wondered what could happen with his numbers offensively if the Predators actually have a power play that is not horrible. And so far this year, Sean, the Predators have a power play that is pretty darn good, and Yossi has 7 power play goals already. So you're talking about a defenseman that very well could end up around a point per game this year. Now, I think that will put him in the conversation. I think based on the sheer wow factor of some of the things that, you know, Cale Makar has done this year, it's probably his award to lose at this point. But, you know, Saros and Yossi, I think, have legitimate cases to win their awards at this point. I think those two I probably put at the top of the list in terms of the two who are most likely.
I'd have to agree 100% on that. And again, you brought up the name Cale Makar. I think, like you said, that's his award to lose. And realistically, you know, I think following and watching and covering this team and then getting opportunities to see other teams as the Predators play against them, I'm not always, you know, immediately taken by the players that I'm supposed to notice and go, oh, wow, look at that guy. But when when Cale Makar is on the ice, you better pay attention, because he is he's on some next level stuff, and it's really impressive. So, you know, like you said, is Josi having a better season this year than he did when he won before? Probably. But Cale Makar is next level.
Oh, I mean, the game here in Nashville a couple weeks ago, when what Josi have 3 assists in that game, and then Makar's goal in that game was just, I mean, it was just freaky on so many different levels. Like, you're talking about two guys that are just really just otherworldly in what they can do and their ability on the back end. And look, there are other guys too, like Victor Hedman. If I feel like he just kind of gets lost in this discussion sometimes, because you're like, well, it's Victor Hedman. Like, Victor Hedman's having a pretty darn good year once again. So, look, that's the thing about this league. There's always a handful of guys that make it really difficult to figure out whose award's going to be what. Like, you start to look around the league. Like, I think John Hines absolutely deserves some consideration for Jack Adams. But then you have, you know, Gerard Gallant in New York and what the Rangers have been able to do this year. You know, the Panthers. You know, you fire Joe Quenneville, what was it, 3-4 games into the season? And here they are in first place in the Eastern Conference right now. Like, there's a bunch of different ways you can go with these awards. And like I said, I realize we're only at the halfway point of the season, but I don't know that I remember getting this deep into a season and 4 guys on the Predators, I think, having legitimate chances to win the award. You know, they've had, you know, obviously Pekka's won a Vezina, and Josi's won a Norris, and Shea Weber was always in the conversation when he was here. They've had guys in conversations quite often. I don't know that they've ever really had this many guys in a conversation this deep into the year.
No, that's a lot of guys. And I think too, especially with the Jack Adams, you know, you mentioned some of those coaches that come in and have those quick turnarounds, and it seems like those guys get a lot of attention. Yeah. When you take what Hines has done, taking over a team in the middle of the season and then dealing with the past 2 seasons he's had to deal with, you know, this is his first run with a full camp. This is his first run with this team of the full season. And so when you look at it through that lens, it definitely deserves consideration. No, it wasn't an immediate turnaround or everybody snapped to attention and started marching straight or anything, but given time and sticking with it, I think everybody started to embrace what he had to offer. And I think you're seeing the results of that. So I think that deserves consideration. Is that flashy enough for everybody who's going to be voting to really look at it and say, oh yeah, we got to respect what's happened there over the past 3 seasons? I don't know, but his name's definitely got to be up there.
Well, and to that point, like, I feel like that's the one award where preseason expectations really matter. Like, they factor into that. Like, so for instance, like, there's, to me, and I don't have like some scientific formula to prove this, but it feels like there's always at least one coach that's a finalist for the Jack Adams every year that basically comes out of nowhere, right? Like, you're expecting their team to be trash all year. Like, maybe you're like Robbie Stanley, and you picked them to finish 7th in the Central Division, which is a very popular pick out there, and they end up in 2nd or 3rd. Like, I feel like those are the type of guys that at least one of them always finds their way into Jack Adams consideration. I think deservedly so. Like, I think part of your job as a coach is getting the best out of your players, and you start to have that conversation. Duchesne, Johansson, Forsberg, Josi, Saros, like Granlund, all these different guys are playing the best hockey that we've seen them play. And to me, John, that's what the job of a coach is to bring your best out of your players. And to your point, like, it's not been, you know, a smooth, easy transition and happened all at once for John Hines, but now it kind of feels like everything's coming together for him. I don't hear a whole lot of a fire John Hines chatter anymore out there on the Preds Twitter.
No, it's really quieted down. I think what's really interesting about Hines is I think I asked him back at the beginning of all the COVID stuff, I think during the return to play, what he was reading. And he'd been reading a book about Winston Churchill leading England through World War II. And he said he wanted to be that for Nashville and leading the team and the city, you know, awesome. Through the team, through this, you know, kind of turmoil of COVID. And you know, of course, we dealt with the bombing and all of these things. And I think it's really impressive when you look back on those comments to see that, you know, we were all told this was a competitive rebuild. Yeah. And look at what the team's doing in spite of that. It's impressive.
It really is. I don't think there's any question about it. And, you know, I think he deserves a lot of credit from what we've seen here. Look, I mean, so does David Poile. I mean, let's be honest, this time about a year ago, the chatter is pretty high on David Poile in terms of, all right, are the Predators about to have to blow this thing up? And if they do, like, are we sure David Poile is the right guy to lead them through the transition or the rebuild or whatever phrase you want to throw out there? You know, a lot of people didn't like the Victor Arvidsson move. A lot of people didn't like the Ryan Ellis trade. I think it's pretty safe to say that's worked out so far with the way that things have played out here on the ice. And as much credit as I want to give to John Hines, which I think he deserves a lot, I think David Poile deserves some credit too for what we've seen this year.
No, you're exactly right. And you know, in spite of that type of chatter around all of the personalities and everything and the fans, I think he's definitely, you know, and maybe calling it a competitive rebuild was enough to kind of light a fire under some people anyway. Yeah. But you're getting not just incredible performances out of the guys you expect to have incredible performances from, but you're getting them out of guys further down the line. And I think that's where you really say, okay, some of these guys that have been added into this lineup or now in full-time roles in this lineup are bringing a lot to the table that I don't think everybody was expecting.
I don't think there's any question about it. Sean, I really appreciate you joining me tonight here on Preds Insiders. Really great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with me.
Anytime. I'll be happy to do it.
Absolutely. Sean Smith from On the Forecheck was our guest here tonight on Preds Insiders. You can check him out at On the Forecheck. Does a great job covering the Nashville Predators. That's going to do it for us today here on Preds Insiders. We will be back next Monday at 6 o'clock. Preds in action tomorrow night, taking on to Seattle Kraken, their first trip out west to take on Seattle. We will be back next week to discuss all things Nashville Predators hockey. This has been Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.